For members only, Golf Smarter number 262, published on December 21, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
In conversation with a legend, Robert Trent Jones Jr.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast and happy holidays. This episode of the Golf Smarter show is brought to you by the generosity of Golf Smarter for members only. Let me explain. Usually we provide a full episode for our members every single week, and for those who subscribe to the free version of Golf Smarter, you get a full episode every other week with a brief tease on those off weeks. Well, in 2011, there will be no more free tastes. Members will get a full new episode each week, and the free subscribers will get a new full episode every other week. So you will be missing out. Also, when you're a premium subscriber, you get complete access to our archives of shows. And now that we're officially in our sixth year of production, that is a full 5 years of interviews every single week. To join Golf Smarter for members only, please go to golfsmarter.com. But the story continues. To show my appreciation for your continued support, my holiday gift to all of you is a full episode this week. Originally, I was planning on bringing back an interview from my trip to Mexico last week. I really had a great conversation with the director of instruction at the Jim McLean Golf School at El Camaleon course in Mayacoba. Unfortunately, just as we were about to finish up the interview, I realized that I never pressed record. But 26 minutes into it, it's like, But Marcos Zuazu has agreed to do an interview again via Skype, and that show will be coming up in a couple weeks. But I promise you won't be disappointed with the replacement. Back in June of 2006, before Golf Smarter celebrated our 30th episode, I was commissioned by Troon Golf to produce a video to promote a new golf course in Puerto Rico that was part of a resort with the St. Regis Hotel properties and had a golf course that was being renovated by the legendary course architect Robert Trent Jones Jr. My goal for this production was to interview Mr. Jones, the owners of the golf property, executives from Troon Golf, and the St. Regis. The video project stalled. The world and the economy changed, and we never completed the project. I've been sitting on this interview for 5 years. What I was hoping to do was release the short video on their website and publish the full interview with Robert Trent Jones on Golf Smarter simultaneously and cross-promote one another. I'm not even sure if the property has opened, but their website says that it's scheduled to open in October of 2010. So you go figure. So here you are, a full 50-minute-plus conversation with Robert Trent Jones Jr. Now please note that since I was looking for great comments to be in this video, sometimes I direct him to answer the question differently. Enjoy. And again, happy holidays. Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to say it on tape. This is a real honor to be interviewing you. And we're here to talk about Bahia Beach, but about Robert Trent Jones' design. I want to talk about both of those things. But I want to start with, what is your vision for Bahia Beach?
Well, Fred, you're a golf aficionado, so my vision is the land itself is beautiful, and it was already a golf place. Therefore, it's like there was a golf course in that land already. But we're in redesigning it completely, really, from scratch. But wherever great land meets great water, the potential for great golf is available. I mean, when Michelangelo would go into the Carrara marble quarry, he would see the statue he wanted to carve in the marble. It wasn't the reverse. He had the idea in his mind. He chose the marble chose him. And I think that's what's happening at Bahia Beach. The land is golf land. It's by the sea. It's the ancient game, Lynx land by the sea. But it's a lot warmer than Scotland.
Did you, when you walked on the property, when you got to see it the first few times, Was that inspiration there for you, that Michelangelo, that the Shoni sculptures of Africa, that it comes through the...
Well, I think the course was already there, so it played a few holes, and it had a lot of gifts. The land had a lot of gifts. It had some beautiful trees. It had lagoons. It had the Yunki Mountains in the distance, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. It had the sea, fresh breezes. And you had a lovely vistas, but the property was a little closed in. And so we opened up some of the trees so they could see these lovely vistas and see the gifts of nature beyond just the golf course itself. So that was one issue. The course is relatively flat. It's an easy walking course. That's going to be fun for everybody. But each hole has its own personality, its own character. Tommy Armour was my great mentor at Wingfoot when I was growing up, and he told me, think of each hole as having a personality, and you have to wrestle with that hole, just as you would be in a wrestling match with another human being. So each hole will have its own character, but it's all linked together as a course. And so you finish one hole, maybe you made a birdie, maybe par, maybe bogey, but now you go on for your next wrestling match, and eventually you have a whole course. And that's what we're going to do. Each hole will be unique. Each hole will be distinct from another hole, yet part of the entire experience of the playing through the course.
So when a course, each hole has its own personality, how do you tie that all together? What brings that all together?
Fred, at Bahia Beach, the idea is that it's what we call a rooting. We root a series of holes. They're little stick drawings. You go out to about 265 yards, and then you turn left, turn right, dogleg left or dogleg right, and you go to whether you want to set the green in this, with a background of trees, or if there's a lake there, and many lagoons are throughout this property, near the lagoon or away from it. And that makes the hole visually and playably fit the landscape, or the landscape is speaking to us, as it were. Then you link these together. You have usually two par fives, two par threes on each nine. That's an orthodox. It may not necessarily be that way, but that's the way what we call a complete rooting. So you have a variety of types of holes, reachable for the young limber backs. They can reach some of the par fives in two, but others are three-shot par fives. You change direction on the course to make the invisible hazard, the wind, come into play from different angles. And the multiple tees, so the beginners can enjoy the course as well as experts and the normal touristic golfer who will be there. In this case, we have a unique feature, I think, in that we have very forward tees up with the dog legs for young children so that families can play. And we did this first for Disney in a celebration course in Orlando, and it turned out that was very popular. On Tuesdays and Thursday afternoons after school, if you weren't 14 or under, you couldn't play unless you could bring your parent, but you had first rights to the course. And it's very important that the game educated our youth so the game will continue to thrive when I'm gone.
That's really amazing. I've done some work with Major League Baseball, and I always got the sense that they knew that if you hook a 5-year-old in, you've got him for life.
Right.
And golf, more than any other sport, is a life sport. I mean, you can play basketball, but for only so long, and you can play baseball, but then you want to be a fan of it. But golf is a life sport. Have you heard of any other courses or doing children's tees? That's phenomenal.
No, I believe we were the first to do that. My father was then alive, and we were did it for Disney. You know, it's appropriate for Disney. I mean, they're kind of focused on that group of youngsters, and it was thematic. Of course, the courses in Scotland, and there are many of them, have a variety of difficult courses like St. Andrews or Carnoustie, but they also have many shorter courses and even some children's courses or in the adjunct. For example, St. Andrews, I think, now has 7 courses under the Lynx Trust. They're not all difficult, but they're some shorter, some longer, some ladies' courses, some that women are prefer and so forth. But they don't. They say you can come play anyone you want, but there are some kids' holes at St. Andrews, for example. And throughout Scotland, they as you said, it's a life game. The children play, men and women, old and young. Grandmothers play with granddaughters and grandsons and grandfathers and so forth. And it's a family sport for life. And we hope that tradition continues at Bahia Beach.
You were reading my mind. Thank you for saying that. What kind of challenges, the geography of Bahia Beach, I would think is unique because you're surrounded not only by water, the ocean, but you've got rainforest. What kind of challenges did this geography present itself?
The ocean is filled with salt and fish, and we don't play golf there, but it's extremely scenic. As you play the last three holes right on the ocean, that's unique. In golf world today, most people would give that land over to housing or hotels, but to have it as a golf course is a special treasure. Now, the inland holes have lagoons, and those lagoons are to some degree already there and to some degree redesigned or man-made and down to the water table. The soil is very sandy, therefore we can sculpt it easily, and it will drain well. So if it does rain at the nearby rainforest or so on, or on the course itself, the course will dry out. And, you know, they say in Scotland, if there's nae wind and nae rain, there's nae golf. In Bahia Beach, if there's no golf, no llanos, what is it? ¿Cómo se llama en Española? Rain. Llanos?
Yeah.
Lluvia. No lluvia, no viento. No, I golf.
So okay, now this time you got to look towards me, right, to do it because so we can be consistent.
No, okay. At Bahia Beach, los gentes dicen no lluvia, no viento, no I golf. And it's much warmer at Bahia Beach than it is in Scotland, so it'll be a lot more fun to play in the rain.
Oh, that's great. But you have the wind. Obviously, you know,
when you're near the sea, you're going to have wind. And that's part of the game. And it's the invisible hazard. And it's a fresh wind, a tropical wind, a warming wind. So you just have to decide whether it's a one-club wind, a two-club wind, downwind, or upwind, and adjust your game accordingly.
You talked about those three holes, the last three holes that are along the water. Do you get excited about opportunities designing holes like that because you've had other opportunities and go, I can continue to improve on that idea? Or do you bring inspiration from other places you've designed?
Well, as T.S. Eliot, the great poet, said, good poets borrow, great poets steal. So, of course, we borrow from other great courses out there. We try to borrow the essence of it. I don't try to replicate it, like mimic a hole at St. Andrews, but we might take, for example, a hole like number 12, which has a plateau green, and make a green that's plateaued and at the end of a hole, but it won't be the same hole. So the principles involved are inspired by some of the other worthy courses. And in my book, Golf by Design, I point that out, how the courses have evolved with building upon past generations and the courses which seem like worthy tests and interesting and fascinating challenges for people who love to play golf.
Let me ask you a side thing. Golf by Design, your book, I found it inspirational for a lot of things that I do, and especially now the way I approach a golf course. It's really improved my game. Why did you write that book? I mean, you're a very busy man. When do you have time to do something like that, and why did you do that?
It's probably my last book. It was a lot harder than I thought it would be to write a book. It was a give back to the game, which has been so generous to me. And I felt that when I was playing golf, often I would explain what, say, Tillinghast was doing at the San Francisco Golf Club. For example, in the fifth hole, he had a bunker set 15 yards short of the green, but it had a face, what we call a face bunker. It looks you in the face. But your eye would be fooled, your golfing eye, and you would think the bunker is right in front of the green. And that's intentional. That's called an illusion bunker. And so I was explaining this to so many people. When I played golf, this is what Tillinghast had in mind here. This is what McKenzie was doing here, scattering bunkers and creating no rhyme or reason at preserving the landscape, say, at Cypress Point. And, Tillinghast at Wingfoot elevated the greens because it was on top of granite. And San Francisco Golf Club, the greens were at grade, but the bunkers were below because it was in sand. And I would explain this, and people said, you should write a book. Well, they've been saying that for 20 years, so in the early 90s I started writing. I think that was, I got hooked into something I didn't know was going to be so time-consuming. But Little Brown was kind enough to publish it, and I learned a lot by simply doing it about other people's architecture and as well as explaining my understanding of the game. And what my intention was to help people lower their scores by understanding what we on defense, the architects, are setting up, we're the goalkeepers, we're setting up defenses, bunkers, trees are left in place, creeks, other hazards, and ultimately the course should yield to good play and good thinking, in my opinion. That's called strategic golf, as opposed to penal golf, which is the Scottish type or Pete Dye style, and where you are punished if you make a mistake, by losing a stroke or a ball if it's in the water, or both. And so basically I was helping people understand the playing field in which they were, because each one's different, and if the architects are knowledgeable golfers and golf architects, they have certain tendencies. So if you read my book, I think it would be at least two up on the first tee on the same course that someone else has not read the book. So that was my help to help people lower their scores and have more enjoyment. If you have docents telling you about the great art in a museum, why not golf architect explaining the playing field on which you're playing?
Like any great professor, you're still a student.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And people often say, do you play other people's courses? Of course I do. So much I can learn. Some golf architects, Fazio and Nicholas in particular, they don't want to play other courses. They don't want to, that's what they say. Those are their quotes, not mine. But they say, well, we don't want to mess up our own thinking. It's sort of like someone who's, say a runner in the Olympics doesn't want to go to swimming because it might hurt his muscles or something. It's a little, there are people who get very focused on their own world. But my view is that there's such a great, grand world of golf, why not enjoy it all?
And you continue to learn.
And to play.
One of my questions I had written down beforehand was, how do you create illusions on the course? So you've already answered that, but let's talk about Bahia Beach. Let's talk about the illusions, the penalties, the opportunities that you've included in something that was there.
Well, Bahia Beach is a relatively flat course, and we have a lot of lagoons, and water is literally dead flat. It reaches its own surface. So anytime you have a relatively flat landscape and water next to each other, it's hard to pick out a target. So we have recrafted the land and make it rolling almost like a wave pattern, as though the waves of the ocean have flowed in onto the golf course and set up the sand ripples, as it were, so you can pick a target. The bunkering is not only to penalize or challenge you, it's also to give you a target. In addition to Bahia Beach, you have a lot of trees. So you feel, even though you're in a flat landscape because of the water, you have a vertical marker, which is the grove of trees, so you have some background, you're able to judge your distances better. That was the gifts of the land. Now, in Florida, for example, it's much more difficult because most of the courses there, the land is also very flat, and there's a lot of water in Florida, but there may be not as many trees. So we have difficulty finding ways to help people. All golf architects have difficulty to help people choose a target line for themselves. I like to use diagonals often, slight diagonals, where if I put a series of bunkers on the right, for the young limberbacks, they can carry them. For me, I have to go around them, but there is a fairway around. There's always a way to complete the hole. I'm a strategic architect, as I mentioned. But if he carries the bunkers, the strong players, the dogleg may go right or arc right. He also has to stop the ball, the way Hogan used to do. Or he might go into the lake on the other side. So the tee shot might not always be a driver. You have to select the one club for that win, that day, and your own game.
You talk about the young limber backs. There's another thing that's come into play since you've been designing, and that's the equipment has changed radically. Mm-hmm. How has the advancement in equipment technology impacted your design?
All games are attack and defense, as I mentioned, and the golf course is mutable and changeable, and so each era reacts to the equipment and the players of its time. For example, the old courses unique in many ways in that it has lasted the test of time for several centuries, but it's been enlarged and improved over time by old Tom Morris in the 19th century and as recently as new tees for the last British Open, which was 2005 at the Gold Course. So the easy way is when the equipment allows the young limberbacks to be who are athletic and skilled to hit the ball prodigious distances off the tee is to lengthen the course. But that's the easy way. And it's also, in my view, a little bit crude because it means for the rest of us the course is getting too long. Augusta National has been faulted for making it hard on its own membership by some of its members. And yet it's staying in tune with the Tiger Woods of our time and the long hitters, John Daly, for example. The other ways that you can stay up with the equipment is, as I mentioned, to have arcing par fives or par tee shots, but put integrity back in the tee shot. We did this on John Tyson's course in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where you don't hit it to a point and turn right, you arc. And that's a new design concept which we've introduced. And I think that causes choice and selection by the player. Even though he's got a good, big-headed driver in his hand, that may not be the right shot because he might hit it too far. I saw Cabrera do this at the President's Cup on the Robert Trent Jones course in Manassas, Virginia, where I walked with him inside the ropes, and the first day he hit the ball over the bunkers, which were intended to be bracketing the hole on my father's design, but through to the rough. The second day he pulled out a 3-wood or a 15-degree loft and didn't go through the rough. So he learned quickly that he could hit it too far. So that's one issue. The other issue is we make the greens a little bit smaller because they're hitting it farther, so therefore they're closer to the green. The target itself could be a little smaller. Or if it's a large green, because you need a large green for other reasons, such as a lot of wind, so the ball will come to rest on the green, then we break the greens into little sub-greens or mini-greens because the experts will play for the flagstick, and for them, being about a 5-yard radius from the flagstick is their target. For the rest of it, the green itself is our target, and for the beginners, it's just somewhere near the green. So we take into account each of those levels of player and have, in effect, golf courses within golf courses.
So you do take that into consideration. You don't just think about the back tees all the time. You're not, because I've heard people talk about designing from the back tees because that's the most beautiful spot. That's what the designer wants you to see, the full vision of the course, but you don't. Necessarily?
No, I don't look at it from a beauty point of view. I look at it from a tactical point of view. The beauty is, if I do our job right, the whole place is beautiful. And that has to do with having no straight lines or rigid looks in the course. You want a convex line, turning into concave line, turning into convex line for the flow of line. That's important. And I like to say if we've accomplished that, you can walk on the course as though you've walked into Monet's garden in Giverny and it's beautiful everywhere you look. You don't have to look at it only in one direction. You can look over here, you can look backwards. You just feel the nature of the beautiful landscape that you're on. But that's called the principle of harmony, and it's hard to craft that, but it's another level of meaning, and that's golf art. And only about 5% of the golf courses, in my opinion, reach that level of beauty.
Inspiration creates innovation. By listening to you, I wrote that down. It seems like you get inspired, you create new things, you do different things that seem to be innovative in ways, whether it be the children's tees or...
Well, it seems to be a Jones trait. My father used to do innovative things, like make very long runway tees, and so that he could accommodate the new players, the beginner players, very far forward, and the ever longer players when they drop the wooden shaft for the steel shaft. So equipment's always been a question in the game. I do some ads with John Cleese. He thinks I'm too conservative. He wants me to be really radical and have postage stamp greens that look like postage stamps, for example. And Titleist, the dimple patterns on a golf ball make the ball fly straighter than it used to. You can't work the ball as much as you used to be able to. I think that's a lost art. The Tillinghast believed that a crisp second shot to a well-defended green was the most interesting most difficult shot in the game. Putting has become, for most of the experts, very easy. because the greens are so well maintained that if they have a good putting stroke, they just get online, it's going to go in. And so all of these factors we take into account. The maintenance of a golf course is very important. After we're done, you know, who takes care of the course either makes us look good or bad, and the owner happy or not so happy. So the quality of construction, which we oversee, is important for the ongoing daily maintenance that goes on for years.
Let's talk about the ownership of Bahia Beach for a moment. Which question do I want to ask first? What was their vision for this golf course, and how were they able to translate that to you?
Their vision was that the course should be...
Let's talk with the owners of Bahia Beach.
Oh, sorry. Well, the ownership of Bahia Beach, including Federico Sanchez and others, Interlink and others, their vision was that the course should be like the spine of the total resort, and that many other activities, including housing and a hotel, Grand Hotel, would be a part of it, and yet the golf course would sort of hold it all together. The beach speaks for itself. Anytime you're near a beach, you know, everybody's, you know, running down to do a little sunbathing or surfing. And the water sports are there. But on the land, the golf course is the what holds it all together. So their vision was that the course should be attractive, not too difficult, what we would call a resort course. My vision was slightly different in that I think that people will not go long distances to play a course that's not interesting. Much like a skier seeks a mountain with champagne snow in Utah or Colorado or the Alps, you want to invite people or attract them to come get an airplane and go long distance because it's different from their home course. So putting those two factors together, we have multiple tees, many tees, so that you don't have to play from the back tees. And you'll have a very fine game from the front tees. And if you get older, you know, grandmothers can play with their grandchildren. And from the forward tees, we don't call them ladies' tees or women's tees. We just call them forward tees. And nobody will be embarrassed if he happens to be a grandson. He's playing from the women's tees. He's playing from the forward tees. So all of that's been taken into account. The course has many levels of meaning to accommodate what the ownership wanted, at the same time attract people to come play it. I think once they come play it, they're going to get hooked and stay. No problem. Play it again and again and again. At Bahia Beach.
Yeah. I'm going to use that line. How important is it for you to have to share the vision that the owner has? I mean, they may tell you what they want. You go out and look at the property and see something and say, you know.
It's a dialogue. I call Fetty my co-author, my co-designer. He has strong views on some things. And I'm an architect, so I can do these things many different ways. I don't see only one way. I see alternatives. And the best architects always saw different ways to solve a problem. If, for example, you opened up the land and you didn't know there was a huge boulder there of granite in New England, you might move the green rather than try to blast the boulder. Now, there's many ways to solve technical issues and golfing issues, but people who are rigid only see one way. Now, the ownership, in my view, is my co-designer, because in the end, it's theirs, and I've been privileged to be entrusted with their land, their money, and their investment. So I'm the vessel the water runs through, and ultimately, it belongs to them. So I obviously listen what we discuss, and if I disagree with them, I'll express my reasons, and they may be educated by that. On the other hand, you know, I try to listen to what their purpose is and suit that purpose.
You were obviously raised, your father was world-renowned in his golf course design, so it was probably the dialogue in your house growing up, if he didn't travel as much as you do.
He traveled a great deal, yeah.
So how did you get inspired to do that is the first part of my question. I mean, what brought you along to say, yeah, I want to do that as well? But what else did you study? I mean, clearly you're talking about art and things like that.
Right. Well, my mother was a big inspiration on literature. She was a Phi Beta Kappa in philosophy and in English at her Wells College in Aurora, New York, where she met my father, who was at Cornell at the time in the 30s. And so while he traveled, she, you know, got me involved with, first of all, she helped me learn how to read. She would always correct my English in front of my Boy Scout troop or baseball team, which used to embarrass me no end, but at least my English was a little bit, the grammar was a little better than it would have been otherwise. And I studied, I went through public school in Montclair, New Jersey. But at the same time, I loved all sports, all the kids' sports. I broke my collarbone playing football. I said, enough of that. I dropped, I think, a fly ball in a key game in baseball, and I was complaining about how I'd let the team down. My father said, why don't you play golf? You're on your own, you know, win or lose. So I picked up the other stick and the smaller ball and played a lot of serious golf. It was high school. Our high school won the state championship when I was the captain of the team. And then I went on to Yale University, where I made the team and played there, and we were Eastern champions 1 year and Ivy League champions all 3 years. And that we played on the varsity, and I was played first man on my senior year, and we played very serious competitive golf. I played in the U.S. junior team at Wingfoot when I was 16, was named to that team. So I grew up in a very competitive golfing environment, and I have to say I was, you know, thrilled to go have the challenges, but I was scared some days of how I would perform, and, you know, if it was a big match, I would be not sleeping well the night before. But then, to follow out in golf architecture, I went on to Stanford Law School, which I did not really find. My mother thought I should get a real job because she thought this thing my dad did was just a cottage industry. It wouldn't continue in the late 50s and 60s. She was wrong, and he was right. So I went to law school, which was interesting, but I had more of I was more interested in law school as a public service venue because I'd been active in interning for Senator Symington of Missouri when I was at Yale, and I was interested in that area of political life. But I soon lost interest in law school because all I did was argue. So I then apprenticed my father, and he invited me, but I stayed in Palo Alto where I set up his office and eventually made my own.
You're Palo Alto, you're Stanford, still wearing the cardinal and white.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. When you were talking about the trees at Bahia Beach, obviously trees from different parts of the world present different opportunities, hazards, options. Where I'm thinking now, if you're on the West Coast, California, whether you're playing up along the coast there, the trees are much lower hanging. You get caught in that, and it's not so easy to get out. What kind of trees? You know, you've got a rainforest. It's not just palm trees at Bahia Beach, is it?
No. Well, the rainforest is actually a little way from Bahia Beach, but it has a rainforest characteristics. And as I understand a rainforest, there are a lot of things living in the branches, a lot of animals and bugs and, you know, a variety of fauna that live in the canopy of a rainforest. So from a golfing point of view, it's dense, and it's like a wall of trees. If you hit your ball in there, it's going to knock it down. A palm tree or a stalk-type tree, like a pine tree or a redwood tree, is easier to play around because you can create a shot around the stalk, and you're not going to be knocked down by the lower branches. So in the case of Bahia, we have some holes which have some palms, large number of them, and if you go in there, you can continue to play it. If you happen to hit it in the so-called denser foliage, you know, you'll be lucky to find your ball. But if you do, you're going to have to play out and lose a shot probably. Then they're both there. So there's a variety. We don't want to keep you thinking only about the trees, but they're there.
And what other types of hazards did you have to create?
There's a lot of water on this golf course, partly because it does rain there, and you're at the water table level of the ground. So if you dig down to get earth to build the fairways up so they drain better, you're going to create a pond. So there are a number of ponds that were created inland or lagoons. And a lot of bird life, you know, interesting birds. They're all different colors. And remember, you know, if you're looking for your bird watching merit badge as a Boy Scout, you'll get it there while you're playing golf if you're a 14-year-old.
That's one of the things I love about playing golf is the wildlife. Mm-hmm. And I play with people who the only thing they see on the golf course is their ball.
Exactly. And their scorecard.
And their scorecard. And it drives me crazy because it's like, I was playing San Geronimo, and there were two hawks flying over. One of them had a 5-foot snake in its mouth. The other was going, wait for me.
Yeah.
You know, I love the wildlife out in the golf course. To me, that's so much part of it.
Well, one time when we opened Chateau Whistler in British Columbia, it was surprising that that particular day, two bears came out and crossed the first and 18th hole, and everybody was talking about it. We'd seen many bears when we were building it, so it wasn't news to us. And so they were frightened by this. And I said, why? Why are you frightened? You know, they're members. They play at scratch.
And as I always say, they live here. You're visiting.
Right.
How does Bahia Beach rate in world-class golf courses? And please, be humble here.
Yeah.
No, let it go.
Well, I don't know yet. And it would be unfair to, while we're in the passion of designing and building, we can't really express how it will be viewed by others. They have to decide that. But we are listening to the land, and we're listening to our client, and we're listening to others speak about it. But I think it'll be a course that will rank in the golf course as a part of a total resort will certainly make the gold medal list of the great magazines who rank such places. So the golf course is not the only experience. It's a whole lifestyle when you come there. And the golf course, even if you don't play golf, you can go walk on it or maybe take a jog or something if you want to. There's nobody stopping you while play is going on. And, you know, I think it's for others to judge whether we've achieved our goal. And our goal is to make the course a work of golf art. That doesn't mean it's going to be extremely difficult. In fact, it will not be extremely difficult. But it'll be very interesting, intriguing. The course will yield to good thinking and good play. But for in every direction, you'll see beauty, natural beauty. If you just look up and don't look down at your ball all the time, you might have a better time.
Okay, so then you must be quite honored when you finish a project and it continues to get accolades. I'm wondering if you don't even go back to that at that point once you finish a project.
No, there are certain projects that we. Well, first of all, I'm a player, so people say, "Do you play golf?" I said, "Does a chef eat?" After we do all his work and set out a banquet for Thanksgiving Day, I'm going to participate. So I go back and play, and when I play the course, I might see some things that I didn't see when I built it or designed it. And also others may. If those tweaks to the golf course make the course better, like opening a bunker so you see into the bunker better from a long distance, or enlarging a green slightly, or whatever. My father did that at Spyglass Hill. He changed several greens after they were open, and the course evolves in time. I think that makes just the course better. You don't often get that opportunity because many people who build golf courses don't want to disrupt the play. But in this case, we try to get it right the first time from the point of view of all the features functioning properly, draining properly, all those kinds of technical issues. But there might be some playing characteristic we missed, and we'll see if we can tweak it.
And technical issues are huge, aren't they?
Drainage, the three most important principles of golf architecture. Get the water away so you can play.
And is that going to be, standing water going to be an issue with Bahia Beach?
No. So at Bahia Beach, a huge drainage system throughout it, catch basins which collect the water. Everything is graded to direct water to catch basins and the drainage system or off the course. And therefore, Bahia Beach, you'll be dry underfoot and you can make good contact with the ball and the club and make a nice divot. It will not be a soggy mess at the end of your swing.
So is it true when people say in your putting, putt towards, the ball's going to break towards the water? Is that true or is it putt towards the drainage?
It's putt the way the water drains is my belief. If you can watch where it's draining, I mean, if it's raining and it gets heavy, you'll see where the water drains off the green. Usually there's three directions the water drains. In the classical courses, they call it three-way drainage. But nowadays you have some lot of subterranean drainage, and so you may not see it's going in three different directions. Then I'll say back left, or far right, and front. Or that would be a good way to understand if the water is draining right, the putts are going to go there. That's why they talk about draining your putt. You know, put it in the cup is also part of it, but what's draining it means where did the water go? So anyway, it's generally true that in mountains the ball will break downhill. If you're playing if there's a strong mountain here and you're playing a plateau on the mountain, and to a green, the green will tend to be slightly canted this way. And that's because the golf architect and the constructors didn't use instruments, because you should really cant it back into for it to become literally level. So at Broadmoor in Colorado Springs, for example, the balls tend to fall off Cheyenne Mountain. And you know, we knew that when we played competitive there. I played in the NCAAs there, and we knew that. So we take that into account. In the seaside courses, the putts usually break to the west because it follows the grain of the green, and the green, like any living thing, follows the sun. And the green, the grass as it grows through the day, is following the sun to the west. So those are just some tips that are in my book that might help you read the greens better.
How much how much does the Bahia Beach golf course, in your mind, contribute to the lifestyle of the Bahia Beach resort?
It's fundamental because
please include
Bahia Beach. The golf course at Bahia Beach is fundamental to the lifestyle of the entire resort, because there are many lovely restaurants. San Juan is nearby, lots of cultural things to do. There's lots of beautiful mountains and beaches in Puerto Rico that don't have golf courses, but this has a golf course. So the overall lifestyle, with the other accommodations that St. Regis will provide in the hotel and the housing that will be integrated with the land plan for, are connected in some way to the golf course. It's the spine of the project. So even if you're not a golfer, it's the golf course is the major part of the whole master plan to hold it all together.
Is there a legacy of golf in Puerto Rico that inspired you at all?
Well, as you, I'm sure, know, Fred, my father designed Dorado Beach with Lawrence Rockefeller in the 50s, and that was real pioneering. Puerto Rico at that time was relatively poor, and they had a philosophy of bootstrapping, so they gave tax breaks to those who would invest, and the Rockefellers did such. They really took a chance. And my dad and Lawrence Rockefeller were very close. I knew him well also, worked for my dad at Mauna Kea and a little bit at Fountain Valley and St. Croix. And the long and the short of it is that they pioneered Dorado Beach, which is now in its 50th year plus, you know, and they're considered the best golf courses on Puerto Rico, but I'm the son of Rin Tin Tin, so I got to play up, see where we can match or better the old man's beautiful work.
So did that excite you about getting this project?
Of course. I'm competitive, and, you know, even in the art form, I want to do my best. So, but, you know, you can't measure it like how fast you ran the mile. You can only measure it by whether people think it's a worthy effort.
And is that, you say you're competitive, is that a driving force to you? Do you want to be compared? Do you want your projects to be compared to the great projects?
Of course, but I think I think today's raters, many of whom are not really that knowledgeable about the golf architecture, may rate the wrong things. They may rate the length of the course as being hard, like Bethpage Black, or they may rate, and therefore it's good. They may be interested in playing the course once. And so how can you not understand the full character of a golf course if you haven't played it in different weather patterns? And it may be a nice day when they play it, or a rainy day when they're playing, or a windy day, and then they will come away with different impressions. But real golf architecture, courses that are really worthy, take into account all those times because they're not being built for the Raiders. Oftentimes, Raiders are more interested in the scenery or the setting. It would be like Bernini's golden framed paintings. The paintings themselves weren't that good, but the frames were glorious in the Vatican, you know. On the other hand, Michelangelo didn't have any frames at all. He painted on a ceiling. And which one do we go look at? The same is true in golf, in my opinion, that the great golf courses are great and last the test of time because they have character. And you want to keep playing them because they inspire you to hit good golf shots and think and have fun.
Does Bahia Beach only have an 18-hole course?
Bahia Beach is an 18-hole golf course. That's all.
Was there something about a par 3 course?
Well, we're talking about that more.
Okay.
But there's a...
I'll cross that off.
Yeah, there's a good practice range as well. So people often say, well, you know, I didn't play well. I didn't. You ruined that hole. You made me go in the water. It's always the golf architect's fault when they don't play well. You never hear any complaints from the winner, however. But I said, well, there's a 19th hole. No, I don't want to go get a drink. No, I said, the one called the practice range. Go improve yourself there, then come back out.
Talk to me about designing a practice range and the importance of that, because I always think that and when I interview pros at courses, I always ask them about their practice putting green. You know, is it consistent with the rest of the golf course? Mm-hmm. Because that, to me, is where your strokes are. And getting a feel for that before you walk out onto the course so you don't have to make those adjustments. So how important is designing Bahia Beach practice facility to the overall feel?
Well, basically, Fred, you've nailed it, that the practice range should replicate what you're going to experience when you actually play the course. If you have smallish greens, then you should have smallish target greens on the range to aim at. If they're larger, large greens, for example. We've done something new recently at the Blessings course where we have like long, thin greens with flag sticks on them and a very precise distance with a laser gun to each of these flag sticks. And if it's, say, it's only 10 yards wide, this green, and you are, say, practicing 8 irons and you're hitting them about 145 yards or whatever, if you're 5 yards short, the ball's going to come right back. If it's 5 yards long, it's going to go over the back. So you get a real feel for the value of your club and the true distance rather than some overly ambitious distance that you think you hit an 8 iron 150 yards, but you don't. You hit it 142. You know, so you learn, and that will help your game when you're actually measuring distances or reading from your yardage book, or if you have caddies and so forth, they'll help you know the precise distance, and then you'll know the correct club to choose.
So let's talk about Bahia Beach practice facility.
The Bahia Beach practice facility is not yet built, but we're building it. It will have target greens. It will not have this X type of it's more of a resort course, so we want people to feel like they're aiming at something. And it'll be long enough that they can hit their big-headed drivers. Of course, I've always thought the answer to the big-headed driver is very simple. Just change one rule. Ban the wooden tee from the tee and just drop it and play. Then you wouldn't use a big-headed driver, or you'd be topping it in one of my bunkers 50 yards in front of you.
Should you aim for bunkers when you're
You can. Bunkers are target bunkers that maybe are beyond the distance you can play, and they turn the hole. That's a target bunker, and that's a technique of architecture to help you have a place to aim at. If you're playing competitively, most professionals will tell you they'd rather play toward a bunker than they would deep rough. It's easier to get up and down from a bunker that's well-maintained. But that's only for experts. But bunkers are like lighthouses. They tell you where not to sail. You know, and they tell you where not to play. So that helps you define your targets.
Fascinating. What is the difference in design perspective of creating a resort course versus a private course versus a daily fee course?
Well, that's only part of it, and those are broad categories. The land itself is real, and the other issues about the ownership of the land. And what other facilities will be there is the main issue. We have designed courses which are very difficult, intentionally, such as the Blessings I mentioned. We've designed courses which are relatively modest and gentle and easy, such as celebration in Orlando because we want to get young people out playing them. That was the owner's wish. But finding the golden mean between the two, where it's, they're fascinating and always fascinating, is the hardest design to do. It's easy to make a difficult course. Just make it long, the target's small, the bunker's deep, too much water, and elevate all the greens, and you won't come back. On the other hand, it's easy to make a course easy. Very broad, no bunkers, nothing to define the shot, large targets, big greens, and you won't come back to that either. But finding that happy medium, that golden mean, where each shot is interesting and challenging to your golf swing and to your golf psyche, that's the hard design.
I find personally that there are two courses near where I live. I play one to boost my ego when I'm not playing well, and then I play the other one when that I love this course because it's challenging. Mm-hmm. It's I'm not going to go out there and play well, and I know it, but it's challenging, and I find entertaining.
Well, that's the beauty of our game. I mean, there's all kinds of different challenges out there, and it's not like a tennis court or a soccer field or a basketball court. It's not fixed, and vive la difference.
Is that part of what attracts you? Is the fact that it opens to your own creativity?
Oh yes, creativity is letting go, loosening up. We have they say we have the two sides of our brain. One is logical and rigid, and the other is highly creative. And I think you need to employ both sides of your brain to play good golf. And if you get in a situation you've never been in before, you may have to create a shot. But if you have hit enough shots in the practice range, you may be at least two-thirds of the way there. You still have to hit it, though.
You've talked about the Raiders and how they judge courses and what they do. But on a personal side, what have been your greatest achievements in design of golf courses?
I think people ask me, what's your favorite course? And I say the next one. I don't look back. I think forward. And they always say, when are you going to go back home? I said, I'm not going to go back home. I'm going to go forward home. So for me, it's an endless journey and a quest. But of the courses which have stood the test of time, Silverado was my first course in Napa. The Princeville courses and Prince Course in Kauai got a lot of attention. Golf Sports Illustrated wrote about them. The Moscow Country Club was the most difficult challenge I ever faced. It took 20 years to build it in Russia because it was then Soviet Union, went through all kinds of turmoil, and they didn't know whether they wanted golf or didn't want it, but we never compromised, and it's now considered the second best course on the European Tour by their own players. Many of the courses in the Far East, in Japan, and in the 80s, and now in Korea and elsewhere, are beautifully landscaped and well-maintained in mountainous terrain. The Spanish Bay, done with Tom Watson and Sandy Tatum, was built simultaneously with Poppy Hills. Poppy Hills was just rated best course by one of the magazines this year, best public course facility in the country. One is a parkland course, and one is a linksland course, and they were built simultaneously by the same architects. So the variety, and if you're playing music, you have to be able to play jazz and Mozart.
Yeah. Well, that's how you've got to be able to paint still life before you can do freeform, right?
Right.
You can't just go out and start throwing paint on a canvas and say, I'm a freeform artist. What's your...
Getting red lights there. I don't know. Your tape.
Is that... Okay. What's your favorite type of terrain to design for?
There are basically five or six types of terrain. Seaside links is the most enduring. Deserts are to me artificial, but easy to move the sand around. But it's man made. The golf would not naturally be there because grass wouldn't survive. Parkland and in heavily treed areas of inland courses, prairies or like heathland, and mountains. And mountains is the most difficult because it adds a third dimension. Most of the other prairies and linksland, it's two-dimensional golf with some minor changes in terrain. When you're in the mountains, it might be huge changes in terrain, and you have to figure out what the ball will do take into account the wind. If you start hitting it out off a tee that's protected and there's a lot of wind there, it might just blow it off the course by the time it drops 50 or 100 feet. So you have to think about all that. And then technically mountains are difficult. But they found, from my point of view, I'm a Western architect. I learned its craft in the Far West. And so I learned it the hardest way by working for my father in mountains. And that's probably the most challenging and therefore the most interesting to me.
A minute ago you mentioned the quest. What is the quest?
Endless golf. We're all pilgrims, and golf is a search for its own grail, which is the perfect round. And there's never, even if you shoot 59, as Mickelson did, he told me he missed a couple of shots and my boy Poo course. So it's, you know, when you're playing well and the ball's going in the hole, you can do no wrong. But I think from a golf architecture point of view, there's always another flag up for the day and another game to be played and another course to be built.
And what excites you about Bahia Beach?
It's beautiful, beautiful land, great client.
Bahia Beach is.
Bahia Beach is a beautiful, beautiful piece of land, great client. It's in the traditions where great golf can be made by in the landscape where great water, the sea, and great land come together. Great golf can happen. So we're in the passion of that creativity now, and I hope we achieve that.
Now invite me to come out and play Bahia Beach, please.
All right. Well, Fred, you better come.
No, not me personally, the viewer. But I mean, it's like...
Yeah. Well, I hope when the work is done that you all will come and play Bahia Beach. I know you'll not only play it once, you'll play it many times. If you just come once, you'll be hooked.
I think we covered a lot.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this.
Okay, Fred, thank you.
Like I said, your book is, clearly I've gone through it. And the Golf by Design, and I quote you quoting Tommy Armour, saying, in his book he says, Robert Trent Jones says, Tommy Armour once said, there's no blind shots the second time you play a course.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me how golfers can play a course and then 2 years later come back and go, I remember this hole.
Right. And that's, memorability is very important. You'll be at Bahia Beach, you'll be able to remember every hole. You may not want to remember some of your shots, but you're going to remember the hole, and it's going to invite you back because your memories are vivid.
Wow, that was fun to relive that. He is a legend, no question about it. And, wow, that was neat. Hey, I want to congratulate Bill Simmons of ESPN for his podcast, The BS Report. He was the winner of the Best Sports Podcast in the People's Choice Podcast Awards, and frankly, it's one of my favorite podcasts, too. Thank you for your votes and for your show of support. It was one thing to be nominated, but a great honor to make it to the top 10, and couldn't have done it without you. Hey, time is running out. You only have till January 7 to sign up for our Golf Smarter Scottsdale Adventure. That's 4 days of golf, a golf clinic, separate group dinners with Chuck Evans and another with Jeff Ritter. It's going to be a great weekend at the Zona Resorts, and I really hope you secure your reservation soon. Again, deadline is January 7th. Now, if you have special concerns and would rather provide your own accommodations, or you can only play two rounds or three rounds instead of all four, write to me, and I'll make sure we can work it out for you, all right? Again, the courses we're playing are Greyhawk, Kierland, the TPC Stadium course, just days after the PGA Tour completes the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Course is going to be in amazing condition. And the pinnacle course of Arizona's number one ranked course, True North. For all the details and to register, go to golfsmarter.com right now. We close with a golf haiku submitted on our Golf Smarter Facebook group page by Alan McDonald of Aberdeen, UK. Alan also listed Golf Smarter as one of his activities and interests on his Facebook profile. That was very cool, Alan. Thank you. So his original golf haiku is this. White ball sits atop tee. A hybrid describes frosty arc. Anticipation. I know I promoted this last week, but I really want this show to be for everyone. So next week, we'll have a conversation with the general manager of True North, Lon Grundy. He's actually the guy that hired me to do the... we'll talk about that, but he's the one that hired me to do that video. He'll tell us about a unique program they've created at True North and invite all Golf Smarter listeners down to play at the Pinnacle Course at our Golf Smarter Scottsdale Adventure. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.